Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 3:20 p.m. Central Time. Today is July 22nd. I thought I would kick off today with another one of these red herring ways of looking at the market, because this is a chart of the lending standards at the financial within the financial sector, and it's back in the region of the peaks from back in 2005 and 6. And when one looks at this kind of data, you would be tempted to think that, golly, the banks are out there just throwing money around, and it must be representative of a significant peak, and that this market is going to come crashing down at any moment. But they don't pay much attention to the fact that one of the reasons why that lending standards figure has jumped higher is because of the PPP loans. So I did see another graphic which helped to illustrate that. We've had this massive creation of PPP loans, and as a percentage of those that have been forgiven, it's approximately 35%, or about 300 billion. So when we think about lending standards, well, banks were told they have to go out and lend that money, and it was under the full understanding that they could lend that money because they were being given it by the government, and if it were not paid back, well, that was going to be fine. So we're in this sort of odd situation where a lot of the things that people are used to monitoring are not working. And this is most particularly relevant when we think about year-over-year comparisons, and where the kinds of indices that would once have been monitored with a great sense of reliability just aren't working. So I think this is a good example of that. So what we should be doing instead is just watching how money is being created, how much of it is, and whether the willingness of central banks is still there to continue to print that money. And then what are the most successful sectors that are attracting that new money? So we can think about the ECB, because Christine Lagarde was out today and speaking after the ECB's decision to hold rates. And she has been very clear in stating that they have learned from their mistakes and they are not going to raise rates preemptively. So this is a big departure for the ECB. They're now courting inflation. So Europe is transitioning before our eyes. In the aftermath of the sovereign wealth crisis, they really did go for fiscal consolidation. They didn't just talk about it. And that pretty much banjaxed the potential for growth in the region. And they've been living with that since. The response to the pandemic was reasonably swift. But I think that what they are now trying to deploy is a more inflationary-oriented bias. They have, and I think we have to remember the fact that the ECB was set up as really a migration from the Bundesbank into a new name. It was really more like a name change for the Bundesbank than any other real factor. And they've been steeped in an anti-inflationary bias. So that was fine in the early 2000s. There was, I think, justifiably a desire to try and ensure that inflation did not take off when so many economies were being absorbed into the common currency area. But now we're in a situation where the threat of deflation has been with us for more than a decade, and the ECB's only real stated mandate is to target inflation. So they are now in many respects adopting the same kind of policy that the Federal Reserve has. So they're continuing to stimulate. And the size of the balance sheet has gone from 4.5 trillion to 8 trillion in the space of the last 15 to 16 months, and it is still trending higher. And there have been significant jumps in the overall size of the balance sheet over the course of the last 15 months, and this pace continues. Then, of course, the ECB will be extremely aware of the value of the currency. So the euro is now right on the lower side of its range, and it was in weaker territory in here today, and it's trading below the trend mean, and it is testing the sequence of higher reaction lows. And it's been in this base formation for most of the last 6 years. So we're at, I think, a rather interesting juncture, because if the price is going to bounce, this is about where it should do. But the ECB does not want to have a stronger currency. European exporters certainly don't want a stronger currency, and they are willing to ensure that the Eurozone will not be the first region to raise interest rates. So capital being both global and mobile, that suggests that money being created in Europe will certainly help to inflate asset prices domestically. And the Euro Stoxx index was well off its lows this week and remains in a clear uptrend overall. It's now right in the region of the 450 level, and that pretty much approximates the peak from back in 2006 and 7 and from back in 2000. So we are potentially now witnessing the completion of a 21-year base formation. And as long as the ECB is going to stick to its new mantle of combating deflation rather than being worried about inflation, then there's still clear potential for continued asset price inflation and additional upside. Then, of course, the ECB is also including property prices, single family or owner-occupied property prices in its measures of inflation. So they do have tools at their disposal to simply change how the inflation is measured, and that it will, I think, contribute to them hitting their targets much more readily. If we think about the forgiveness of the PPP loans, well, I regard that as a red herring for the laxity of the financial sector. And I think, in fact, the lending standards are stricter than that. But one thing that is for certain is we seem to be getting more climate volatility. And coffee prices were up in an aggressive manner in here today. The growing region around São Paulo experienced frost. That's going to kill off a number of the younger trees who don't have well-developed growing systems. It's also worth reminding ourselves that coffee plants generally tend to be younger anyway, because the older plants are not as productive. So there is a growing cycle, and it's usually from bud to cherry is about 2 years. So this could impact the coffee supply for at least the next year or two. If we look at the longer term history of coffee prices, well, they do tend to have these occasional bouts of volatility. The last significant spike was back in 2010, and the price really went wild for a short period of time. And prior to that, it was back in the 1990s, and I do believe that was also related to frost. So we've had significant volatility in coffee prices in the past, and this does look like another one of those examples. And if that cold weather persists, well, then there's the real potential that the price will take off even faster. So when we think about the cost of food, well, this is something that lots of people will see on a daily basis. And agricultural commodity prices have broken their downtrend, and the index is firming from the region of the trend mean. Again, it's, I think, a highly relevant point that agricultural prices generally tend to trade in contango. So when one is looking at a futures metric like this fund, then it will trend lower more often than not. It's when it starts to turn around where you start to get backwardations, and then when there is an acute lack of available new supply, well, then agricultural prices can really march higher quickly. And this does look like what we're seeing now. The damage to supply chains, the volatility in weather, and then the additional fact that the solar cycle bottomed in late 2019 and the new cycle kicked off in the autumn of 2020. Well, that suggests that activity in the sun is going to become progressively more active in the next couple of years. That means that more solar radiation will be hitting the earth, and therefore that will probably also exaggerate some of the warming patterns that are now increasingly being monitored. So it's likely that over the course of the next few years we're going to see record temperatures and even more volatility. And we're now in late July, so we're pretty much coming into hurricane, the prime period of hurricane season. And we've had a couple of storms in the Atlantic so far, but nothing that's been particularly worrisome in terms of crop damage. But there is certainly the potential that we'll have more storms creeping in this portion of the season. The one thing that might mitigate that is that the high pressure systems over most of North America have sucked in colder air around the coast, so that has helped to moderate the hurricane formation. So that is potentially one mitigating factor in the volatility in commodity prices. But we are seeing more people complain about inflation, and oil prices continue to march higher. So this, I think, is an interesting system here where we have the big decline on Monday and a really impressive rebound to confirm a higher reaction low over the last 2 days in particular. So there's still potential here that crude oil will march back up towards that $80 area and potentially even surmount the peak from back in 2018. But the reality is that there is a lot of available supply out there, and it is really only a question of how long it's going to take for that supply to come back to market. So I'm not nearly as bullish of oil as I am of copper, because the reality for copper is quite different. We have new demand growth drivers that are lining up. So the traditional sector that copper has been used in has been in electricity, transportation, and in the household sector, and the electric sector overall. So now we have transportation opening up as a demand growth driver, and then also renewable energy. And then this is the definition of supply inelasticity meets rising demand. So as we think about some of the copper miners, well, they do have room to run, and we've had a reasonably significant pullback. So Southern Copper now is steadying in the region of its trend mean. And if we think more generally at a copper miners ETF, well, then it's also steadying from the region of the trend mean, and this looks like a first step above the base formation. More generally, as we look at the mining complex, the FTSE 350 mining index was a metals and mining index was in negative territory today, but it's so far holding this move above the 20,000 level, and this continues to look like a bull market overall. And this, again, is another price series which has been going sideways for a reasonably prolonged period of time. So we have inflationary pressures rising, and we have central banks that are unwilling to do very much of anything to combat inflation. US treasuries are at an interesting juncture because we had the significant compression. We had a rebound in the yield over the course of the last few days. We're at an odd situation where the US Treasury has to start liquidating some of its cash pile to fall into line with the strictures that have been put upon it as part of the debt ceiling negotiations. So that could contribute to less supply of new bonds, which would then create a buying opportunity for investors. So we may see bond yields compressing further, despite the fact that inflationary pressures are rising. So again, this is another market which is being influenced by exogenous factors as a result of the pandemic that are making really a nonsense of the traditional way of monitoring markets. And then we can think about gold, because the price continues to hold here around the $1,800 area. And if it continues to hold the 1750 level, which was put in at the beginning of the month, well, then that's a higher reaction low. So if we go back and think about what gold does, we had the clear downward trend from the peak in August, and at that peak in August, I sold my trading longs, and I got a lot of pushback from people who thought that I was wrong to do that, and that there was no way that prices could pull back or move into a corrective phase. And we have exactly the opposite situation today, where people really doubt that gold can start to pick up again. So that at least is supportive of the view that it might, because a lot of the bad news is already in. And the price has broken the sequence of lower rally highs, and it's looking increasingly likely that we have a higher reaction low. The one thing, though, that is at the back of my mind, and I don't have any confirmatory evidence to support this view, but I think it is worth potentially considering it anyway, it's that we're in 2021, so it's an uneven number. And one of the hallmarks of the big bull market from the 2000s up to the peak in 2011 was that gold had these long hiatuses, and it went sideways for anything up to about 18 months. And then it broke out in September of an uneven year. So it broke out in 2005, in 2007, in September of 2009, and then that pattern became well recognized. So it broke out in July of 2011, and then it had its final blow-off. Well, then we can go back and think about the fact that it broke out in June of 2019, peaked in 2020. So by the time we get around to September of 2021, I wonder, are we going to get something similar to what we had in the last big bull market? Will we start to see the gold price breaking out in Septembers of uneven years? If we do, that would really be a really nice coincidence with the kind of action and one of the primary trend consistencies that we had in the big bull market in the 2000s. And I think there is a fighting chance that we are going to see gold pushing on to new high ground this year, but that would be absolutely dependent on the price continuing to hold at this higher reaction low. Now, when we then think about what else is going on in this world, well, the Chinese currency is still holding steady. So They have arrested the continued advance of the renminbi, and they don't seem willing to allow it to strengthen any further. And when we think about India, well, India is being held out as the defense again, or the frontline defense against China's expansion in the area. And India is probably going to receive as much assistance as it requires in order to ensure they don't fail. So that's beneficial for asset prices, even if valuations are increasing. So the Nifty index remains really quite well bid. The Vietnamese market has been pulling back of late, but it was well off its lows in here today and finding support in the region of the trend mean this week. So there is certainly potential here that the lows are in and that this is a market which can rally from here. There's a lot of concern about the impact of the Delta variant right across the Asian region, and not least because a lot of the vaccines that were donated by China are less than effective. So that is increasing the infectivity of the population, and ensuring that lockdowns and social distancing measures are persisting longer than anyone would really like to consider. And of course, that is taking a particular toll on the standard of living of many people in Australia, but the stock market's not looking back. So we're still very much in a liquidity-fueled environment. And as long as people are worried about the coronavirus and they're worried about the pace of the economic recovery and the fact that it's inevitable that growth will start to moderate after such a strong snapback from the decline in 2020, well, we're still in a liquidity-fueled environment, and that's beneficial for asset prices overall. So we will occasionally have bouts of volatility, and the VIX index popped on the upside on Monday, and it's been coming back down again over the last 3 days. There is a very mild upward bias to that volatility over the course of the last month. So we're at a rather interesting juncture here. If volatility starts to, or continues, I should say, to come back down, well, then that would be beneficial for asset prices. If, on the other hand, we're at the beginning of a new trend of rising volatility, well, then that would contribute to a medium-term process of consolidation in the stock market. So, what happens over the next few days is going to be very instructive as to what we can anticipate from markets going forward. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.